Welcome to another episode of The Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and all-around functional nerd. And my partner in crime on this show is Mr. John Anelio.
Hey, I'm John. I'm a singer-songwriter. I write songs about science fiction, fantasy, and other nerdy things. Each week on The Functional Nerds, we interview various authors in the science fiction and fantasy genre. We interview other folks, too, but mostly authors. And we got a great interview coming up for you in a few minutes. But Patrick and I did want to tell you a little bit about our website, The Functional Nerds. Most of you who listen to this probably subscribe through it through iTunes, and that's great. Keep up with that.
Yeah, we appreciate that. That's awesome. We
very much appreciate that. But if you have a chance, go to functionalnerds.com as well and subscribe to the feed there in your blog reader, because we are doing some stuff on the actual site other than the podcast. So we're doing reviews and we're doing just people nerding out about different things. So we're getting a couple different posts a week. The goal is to get a daily post there, but we're moving towards that. So please go ahead and do that and check that out. We also have some swag that you can now buy, some Functional Nerds t-shirts and the like. So
what's interesting about that, John?
What's that?
I just put like text on stuff, and then now I'm actually getting people who want the logo.
Yeah, I'd like to see the logo on there too. So
I guess I got to put the logo out there, yeah.
I think you do. But yeah, so if you want to support the show, that would be a great way to do it. Buy yourself a t-shirt or a mug or something like that. So
has anyone even mentioned to you our new logo?
No. You're the first.
Well, I mean, you've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it, sure.
And I've seen it, and I kind of quietly added it to the podcast when it goes out to iTunes. Mm-hmm. So it shows up in iTunes now.
Yep.
But I haven't had, except for one person or two or three who said, you know, hey, I want a mug, but I want your logo on it. No one's really said anything about it. So I was just wondering if people had even noticed.
Well, I hope they do. But anyway, so go and check all that stuff out, and that would be great if you can do that.
Before you go on, we got to tell people, Kathy Russell just did a review.
Yes. She interviewed Alan Dean Foster's new book, so go
she
and check
that out. She didn't interview it. She reviewed it.
Did I say interview? I meant review.
You did.
Oh, sorry. I meant she reviewed it, and so go and check that out on the site, and got lots of other cool stuff going on there as well.
Yeah, and then my thing is, if you like our podcast, tell a friend.
Yes, please do. Please do. Spread the word. So that'd be great. So anyway, this week we're
so excited.
We are very excited. This is a very big name for you. We've actually had some pretty nice big names over the course of our year, but this is quite a big one. We were
This is your home run, John.
Thank you. Yes, this is my Mike Resnick. But anyway, our interview this week is with one Mr. Harry Turtledove. Yes. Harry needs no introduction from us. He's got many, many best-selling books out there. Ace Rock sent me Atlantis and Other Places, which is a collection of short stories, and we talk mostly about that. But Harry is just a really great guy, really delightful man. Had lots of nice things to say for someone of his stature and his success. He's very humble and a great sense of humor. So we Patrick and I had a great time talking to him. So
absolutely,
we hope you enjoy the interview.
Yes.
And on the line tonight, we have award-winning author, best-selling author, Harry Turtledove. Harry, thanks so much for coming on the show with us tonight.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
Harry, as most of our listeners, I'm sure, are very familiar with Harry's work. He has many, many books out there in lots of different genres, probably best known for his alternate history. And that's the book that I read that was sent to me by the good people at Ace Rock was Atlantis and Other Places, a collection of short stories. And they were all alternate history short stories. And so, Harry, were these a bunch of short stories that you kind of had accumulated over a number of years, and what was sort of the glue that made you want to put these together in one collection?
Well, several of them are novella length, and novellas are always hard to place in collections. Two of them, the first and last stories in the book, center on the Atlantis universe that I've also developed over three novels. And I thought, you know, putting those all together along with some other stuff that I've published fairly recently would make a nice book. And my publisher was nice enough to agree with me, so...
That's always convenient.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So I did want to ask you a question about the first short story that does take place in your Atlantis universe, and the main character in it is an artist who's concerned about the environment, and the issue that you discuss in it or that you write about is about the effect of sort of introducing foreign things and introducing man into an ecosystem. And I always find that very interesting when you hear about, oh, you know, this group of people brought over, you know, a certain animal, and then it totally destroyed the ecosystem there because they didn't have a natural predator or anything like that. I always found those kind of things interesting, and that's kind of an idea that you play with in this story. Is the environment and ecosystems, is that a particular subject that you find particularly interesting? What chose you to write about that?
Well, I was reading a book about the pre-human ecology of New Zealand, which rifted away from Australia about 85 million years ago, and how birds filled most of the niches that mammals pulled in, you know, bigger ecological systems. And I got to thinking, well, what would happen if at about that same time a chunk of North America had rifted away from the main continental mass and gone out, you know, moved slowly out into the widening Atlantic Ocean. And that was the origin of the Atlantis universe, because I was thinking, well, if this sort of thing were to happen and Europeans were to come upon this land, then here's this humongous island out in the middle of the Atlantic. What are they going to call it but Atlantis? And so, you know, with this isolated ecology, I got to play around. I mean, some of the things that I put in there are analogies based on the moas and other life forms that New Zealand really has, and some of them are variations on stuff that really does exist in North America, or did exist, but in the real world became extinct before the Europeans found it. So, you know, I had great fun just developing the background and the ecology of Atlantis, and then imagining what would happen after several hundred years of settlement. I mean, we have examples here in North America. We have examples in Australia. I mean, we have examples, you know, New Zealand itself is a prime example, because as soon as the Maoris got there, inside of a couple hundred years, the moas were no moa anymore. You know, I mean, they were, you know, gone basically in a couple hundred years of big barbecues.
You know, yeah. And today people are eating Samoas because Girl Scout cookies came out
there. There you go.
And I'm pretty sure all the Samoas are gone.
Actually, the Maoris are related to the Samoans, but that's another story again.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if you read, you know, just what you were just saying there with you know, New Zealand. I don't know if you read the Guns, Germs, and Steel book.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, and I, you know, just what you said there, it reminded me of that, about how, you know, everybody's impact and why certain societies or, you know, certain cultures developed, I guess, faster would be a better way of putting it than others. And I found that book to be very interesting and quite enlightening.
Well, it's extremely interesting. There are places where, you know, where I don't altogether agree with them. You know, having been trained as a historian myself, lo these many years ago, but it's a provocative book.
Definitely,
it's a book that deserves to be thought about.
Absolutely. Jared Diamond, is that the author's name? I believe.
Yes, Jared Diamond.
Yes, I read that a couple years ago. Well, it's real interesting, and I kind of see the connection there.
John, before you go too far, yeah. I did want to throw out there that I've been meaning to buy your Southern Victory books for my uncle.
Oh, okay.
He keeps Confederate money locked away somewhere, just in case South rises again.
I'm not too sure he will appreciate me. I don't think the Confederates necessarily warm and fuzzy guys once they gain their independence.
Right.
It's not that kind of world.
Sorry, John. I just wanted to throw that out there.
No, that's fine. Do you hear that echo, Patrick? Or it's gone now.
I did, but it's okay. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, so the next question that I had was that two stories in the collection are somewhat political in nature. Bedfellows. Yes. I'm just trying to lightly word it. And Bedfellows and News from the Front, and they're pretty much opposite ends of the spectrum. And you even say that in the forewords that, of each story. But News from the Front, I found very interesting. And Patrick, you'll have to read this one because it's really a very interesting idea for a story. And what it does is it takes takes World War II, but tells it as if it was newspapers of today writing about World War II. So sort of like criticizing.
And writing about all the spectacular government screw-ups that started the war.
Yes, and I thought that was just a great idea for a short story, and very interesting. And I know you said, you shouldn't talk too much about it, but what sort of was the spark for that idea, for that story?
Probably watching exaggerated, salivating news stories about Iraq, because that's what I wrote the story when the Iraq war was bubbling brightest, and just thinking, there needs to be a little bit of perspective here, or maybe there should be. And so I wrote a story, and as usual with science fiction, nobody paid much attention to it, but that's the curse of our field.
Well, everything has changed. I mean, the way that news just reports on all these conflicts across the world. I mean, it's completely changed. I remember the first Iraq war, and the place where I was working at the time set up a television, a big screen TV, and had it just running CNN all the time. And that had never, that had never happened before.
Nope. You get live death, 24/7 if you want it. But, and then, there's another quantum leap now with Facebook and Skype and all the other stuff that you can do these days to hold people together in unobtrusive ways. And look at the effect that it had in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think now our government has a Farsi language Twitter feed for Iraq.
Yeah.
Or Iran.
Yes.
We had our guest last week on the show was Mark Stevenson, and he wrote a nonfiction book called The Optimist Tour of the Future, which is a very interesting book that talks about sort of a lot of the technologies that are going on and sort of the speed at which things are developing. And one of the things that we spoke to Mark about last week was just this, about how one of the chapters in his books talks about how now there is actually less violence in the world than there was in the past. But because of the way we're also connected with all these things, as you just mentioned, we know about the violence almost instantaneously. Whereas, something that was going on in Africa or in the Middle East, we wouldn't know about maybe ever, if not for at least a couple of weeks. So I think it does have a big impact on the way the world is now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the next question that I wanted to get to is that you've got a PhD in Byzantine history. Is that how you pronounce Byzantine? I always wonder
if I'm pronouncing
it. And now I wanted to ask you, what about this period in history that drove you to earn your doctorate on it? And what was the impact of that on stories in your collection? Because there's the Farmer's Law and a couple other stories in the collection that sort of focus on this period of history.
Well, okay, this happened. I have a degree in Byzantine history because when I was 14 years old, I found L. Sprague de Camp's Lest Darkness Fall in a secondhand bookstore. And this is a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court kind of story that drops a modern archaeologist back into Italy in the 6th century A.D. when it's ruled by the Ostrogoths and the Byzantine Empire is trying to reconquer it. I was a science fiction reader, not least because by original intention I was a red-hot science person. And I got into Caltech probably intending to be in astronomy. Excuse me, an astronomy major eventually. Freshmen didn't have majors, but I flunked out at the end of my freshman year because calculus was tougher than I was. And I needed to do something. I did want to stay in college because this was 1967 and my draft board was not amused by my flunking out of Caltech. And so I ended up with studying history and studying Byzantine history, and as I say, it's all Sprague de Camp's fault. And, you know, I've certainly used the degree. Farmer's Law is directly based on stuff that I did when I was preparing for my degree. I've written a fair amount of Byzantine-based fantasy and alternate history. I've done a straight historical novel set in the Byzantine Empire under the pen name H.N. Turtletaub, and Turtletaub is what the family name was before my grandfather anglicized it when he got over to this side of the Atlantic. And so, you know, I've certainly used the research skills that I picked up acquiring a history degree in all kinds of different weird ways, you know, in the Timeline 191 series, in most of the things that I do, because, I mean, I'm pretty good as a historical researcher, you know, I mean, if you're a science fiction person who has a degree in history, you're probably going to write a fair amount of alternate history. Funny how that happened, isn't it?
I'm curious, did your grandfather anglicize the name, or was it a census taker who did it?
No, my grandfather did it.
Okay.
As far as I know, anyway. I mean, this was back in the 1890s, and I was not there to witness, but that's my understanding anyway.
I only mention it because I know a lot of people whose family names simply got changed because a census taker decided to spell it differently or couldn't spell it.
I know people like that too, but no, my understanding is that my grandfather said, in effect, okay, we're in America now, they speak English here, so I'll translate the name. You know, I mean, years ago I played on a softball team with a guy whose name was Norm Eagle, whose grandfather had been Adler and had translated it into English when he got over here. So, you know,
interesting.
Yeah, I think it's
something that happened.
Sure.
I know my ancestry is Italian, and when my grandfather came over, I'm named after him, and my name is John. But he changed his name to John when he got over here because his Italian name was Giacomo.
Giovanni, he was Giovanni.
He was not Giovanni. Well, that's the thing, is that his Italian name was Giacomo, which would translate to Jacob, actually. So he should have changed it to Jacob, but I think John was more American sounding to him. So he wanted the most American, you know, sounding name that he can have.
Yeah.
I think that was common at the time. You know, they wanted to come and they wanted to speak English and they wanted to sort of assimilate into the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
which, you know, I think is good, you know, because nowadays I teach in an elementary school as my day job. And, you know, I see lots of kids from all different backgrounds. And what I like about now, I think now in our culture today, I think people kind of keep their culture a little bit more rather than rushing so much to just assimilate. I like the fact that people seem to hold on to their culture, because my father, who is first generation American, does not speak a word of Italian, even though his parents lived in Italy. You know, it would be nice to sort of hold on to the culture a little bit more, I think.
My folks spoke Yiddish, you know, who were also first generation, spoke Yiddish between themselves, mostly when they didn't want me to know what was going on. You know, which was a great incentive for me to learn bits and pieces of the language, but that's all I have. My father died when I was 11, and after that, my mom spoke it much less, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know with my father's parents, like, they purposely didn't teach their children Italian. They wanted them to speak English. They didn't, you know, that was part of the thing over here. So.
You see, my grandmother and grandfather on my dad's side were Irish immigrants, and they taught all their kids how to drink.
Very good. I had to pick up a good deal of that on my own, but I managed.
That's great. Now, the next question I had for you, Harry, is in the book, your story, someone is stealing the great throne rooms of the galaxy. That appeared in an anthology for the 2006 Worldcon in Los Angeles. And I guess that was put together by Mike Resnick. Resnick, who is a friend of the show, has been on our show a couple times. Patrick and I actually got to have dinner with Mike Resnick at World Fantasy this past year, and great man.
Mike's a good guy.
He is, and we got to meet his wife, and I get to argue with her over sweet tea. not over drinking sweet tea, over the actual sweet tea.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. Now, I just wanted to ask, what was Mike looking for when he was sort of asking for those stories?
Frankie Thomas was going to be the media guest at that Worldcon, although he died shortly before it opened, you know, and he was the original Space Cadet on TV back about the time I was born.
Yep.
And so this was an anthology of Space Cadet stories. And Mike sent me an email saying that he was getting a bunch of these really earnest ones, you know, about, you know, Space Cadets and growing up and all this stuff. And what are you going to do, Turtle Dove? And I had this silly idea. I mean, the roots of this came from the bad puns about chambers and anti-chambers and using this as a space drive. And so I thought, I'm going to write a silly story about this. And so I wrote a silly story about this, and I probably had, you know, my characters being hamsters, because I'm friends with Esther Friesner, and Esther Friesner is a hamster freak. And I just, you know, I was just being silly, you know, and I thought, okay, I could be silly for 5,000 words, why not? And so that's how that happened. And when I told Mike what I was going to do, he said, I'll buy it. Sight unseen, I'll buy it. You know, and that is, you know, that is the only time in my life I have ever had anybody editing anything tell me that.
I have a question. John's been asking a bunch of questions. Here's my questions. Did you set out to become the master of alternate history?
No, I set out to be a science fiction writer, and this seems to be the kind of science fiction that I do a lot of. I mean, I've done all kinds of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of different kinds of fantasy. I've done straight historical fiction. I've done a couple of mystery stories. There's one of them, you know, one of them is in the collection that you mentioned, Farmer's Law. I've done, you know, I've written several mainstream stories, and I've even sold a couple of them. So, I mean, I do all kinds of stuff, but I've got a lot of alternate history out there because I'm a science fiction writer with a degree in history, I guess.
Well, I think all science fiction asks the question, you know, what if?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously with your background and your knowledge and your expertise, you just take it to a different level.
Well, what happens is that, you know, ordinary science, you know, the more common kind of science fiction asks what if and changes something in the present or in the near future and then looks at what happens a little farther in the future. And alternate history takes exactly the same technique, except it changes something in the more distant past and then takes a look at what happens in the nearer past or in the present. You know, it's the same extrapolation. You just started at a different point on the timeline.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Harry, you know, Patrick, do you have any other questions? Because those were the ones that I had prepped. I don't know if you had any particular questions you wanted to ask Gary before we started wrapping up.
Not to kiss Harry's butt, but I'm just kind of sitting here in awe a little bit. So,
I'm extremely flattered, but trust me, you know, it's entirely unrated. You know, I'm a guy.
You've written what, dozens of books, and I mean, they are extremely, I don't want to say complicated, I want to say intense. They're very dense. I mean, there's lots of stuff going on. I remember the first time I read Into the Darkness, you know, it's just like you sit down, you start reading, you're going, holy crap. You know, and you got to focus and read the, and so, you know, I just think, like I said, I'm just in awe right now. So,
well, I'm extremely flattered. Look, the first thing a writer has to do is keep the reader turning pages and keep the reader interested. Because if you don't do that, you can't do anything else. And if I make people think a little bit afterwards, that's probably not altogether a bad thing either.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Exactly. So are you doing any conventions this year? Are you going to be at Worldcon or?
I will be at Worldcon. I will be at World Fantasy. I'm going to be at MarCon in Columbus, Ohio. I'm going to be at a little con called WillyCon in Omaha, and of course, I'll be at LostCon. You know, and I also think I'm going to do Comic Con too. Looks that way.
Wow.
Oh, great! Great, a lot of big appearance. Fantastic, great.
So I will be places. You know, I mean, Comic Con and World Fantasy, of course, are both down in San Diego, and I live in Los Angeles, which is only a couple of.
So you're cheating. You're cheating this year. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks, Harry. So right now, the book that we were talking about today is Atlantis and Other Places. That's a collection of short stories by Harry Turtledove. I know you have a couple other things out right now. Why don't you tell our listeners some of the other newer releases that you have out?
Well, let's see. The other book that came out this past year is called The War That Came Early, and it's the second book in the series. It's called West and East. The third book in that series, called The Big Switch, will be out this summer. I've got the galley sitting on my table down in the kitchen. And coming out in December from Rock is... Okay, one of the things that I didn't know about until fairly recently is that there is what they call, quite literally, a supervolcano sitting under Yellowstone Park.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That does horrible things about every 700,000 years, and it last erupted about 700,000 years ago. And what it would do to the world if it went off again is the subject of the book I've got coming out in December.
Very cool. There's a lot of people watching that, waiting to see what's going to happen.
Yes, there are.
Yeah. Do you have a website that people can go to check any, you know, your appearances and things like that, Harry?
Actually, no. I am a private you know, but if you Google my name, the first thing that will come up will be the website that a fan runs. It will tell you more about me than you really want to know.
Is that the Stephen Silver site?
Yes, that's the Stephen Silver site.
Yeah. It's at sfsite.com.
Great. All right, well, Harry, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was a real pleasure speaking to you, and I hope everyone goes out and checks out your new books.
Thank you very much. I hope so, too.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
And we're back. Well, hope you enjoyed that interview. We had a great time talking to Harry. Go check out his new book. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are big fans of him already. So we really don't need to pimp his stuff anymore. But we hope you enjoy it, and we hope to get him back on the show again sometime soon. In the interview, he talked about being at Worldcon this year, in addition to a bunch of other ones. So hopefully, maybe Patrick and I will bump into him at one of the cons, and maybe we can chat him up at one of those cons as well.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
I wanted to announce that I'm both saddened and excited to be a Premier Silver Reward Zone member at Best Buy.
Oh, very, very, very exciting news. Very exciting news.
Do you have any idea what that means?
No, and I don't know if I want to know.
It means that I spent way too much freaking money at Best Buy.
I see. Yeah.
Well, what it do really you have, does.
Creatively, what do you have going on this week, Pat?
Creatively, Clifton Hill and I have launched a webcomic called The Cat Bites. And it's rather loosely...
Bites, huh? B-Y-T-E-S, correct?
Yes, B-Y-T-E-S, Cat Bites. That's so you can get some technology in there. It's extremely loosely based on my conversations with my cat from atfmb.com.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing all the art. I'm doing all the writing. And so, you know, like when we've had a couple of people on recently talking about writing comic books,
mm-hmm.
I have been writing a webcomic using the comic book format.
Cool.
And the formatting and stuff. And been sending that to Clifton. And I think his art is great. We're really excited about that. It's over at Catbytes, C-A-T-B-Y-T-E-S dot A-T-F-M-B.com.
Fantastic.
We'll put some links and stuff like that up. Over at Grasping for the Wind, I've got Podcasting 101 is still going on. Hopefully by the time this goes live, part 3 will be up.
Sounds
which
good.
Which is kind of cool. I encourage everyone to go over. We had a legend on tonight here on the Functional Nerds with Mr. Turtle Dove. We also had a legend on the SF Signal podcast in the form of Mr. David Drake. Which I thought was kind of cool. Fred got to go all fanboy on him. And that was just an awesome interview. So I just like to tell people about that because I think it's a big deal. He's pretty cool.
Cool.
Other than that, I don't know.
Okay, cool. Well, I still have my new releases song that is out, so that you can download for absolutely free. Just go over to johnanilio.bandcamp.com. You can get lots of...
John?
Yes.
John, is there a video?
There is a video. I did make a video of it where I'm playing my Irish bouzouki. It showed up on SF Signal today. I'll probably put up on my site, and I'll probably throw it up on Functional Nerds as well, of me just singing this silly song where I rhyme all these authors' names. So very silly, but some of the authors got a kick out of it. So so go check that out. That was pretty fun to put together. And you can download lots of my other music at Bandcamp as well. Bandcamp's a great site. You can pay what you want for stuff. You can get it for free, high quality. It's just a site that I love using. So go check that out. You can also follow me at twitter.com/JohnAnilio. And you can follow me on Facebook too. If you just throw my name into Google, you'll find all these links. But I am using Facebook a little bit more these days too, so you can friend me up there.
Just when you're searching for John Anilio in Google, do not search John Anilio bikini.
Oh, you know, everybody has to pay their way through college, and you know, so I've done some things that I'm not proud of now, but
I love that you went with that. That's hilarious.
Don't try. Anyway, so next week on the show, we have John Jackson Miller, who is the author of a new Star Wars book called The Knight Errant, and I'm about midway through that right now. Where I'm psyched to get all these Star Wars authors on. We have John Jackson Miller coming up. We also have a couple of other Star Wars folks coming up soon, so that's right in my wheelhouse. So I love that. So John Jackson Miller will be our guest next week.
I like when you get the Star Wars people on because it gives me an opportunity to do one of the three things that I'm really, really good at.
And what is that?
The lightsaber noise.
Oh, yes. You're not that good at it.
I'll try again.
Yeah. That was better. That's much better, yeah. So anyway, so tune in next week. So so thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye. Thank you.
islands, sailing you reach before a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside, on the downhill run to Papeete Bay, off the wind on this heading line.